The next few weeks, we're going to look at some very familiar, what the Bible calls stories. Sometimes they're called parables. And I know you've heard at least some of these before. In Matthew chapter 13, there's seven parables given there. These are given by the master teacher. And so we know that he presented these in the very best possible way. That's why we call him the master teacher. And these parables are all about the kingdom. The kingdom of heaven is like. The first one's about the parable of the sower. And then there's the parable of the tares, the weeds. And both of those are in some ways, we might say, a little discouraging, but there's lessons to learn from those. But now we go to the parable of the mustard seed. And in every one of these parables, Jesus is stressing some characteristics of the kingdom. And what he does is he takes everyday normal conditions and people and things, objects, and teaches these great truths from them. And nobody could do it like he did. That's why we call him the master teacher. Someone sowing seeds. That was very common in the first century. Sowing seeds in different types of ground. Sometimes there'd be weeds that would grow. And if you ended up pulling up the weeds, sometimes you'd pull up the good with it. That's the parable of the tares. But now we come to the parable of the mustard seed. Still about planting and growing. And there's some great lessons here. The entire parable is two verses long. So it won't take long to read. Matthew chapter 13, verses 31 and 32. Matthew 13, verses 31 and 32. Another parable he put forth to them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all the seeds, but when it's grown, it is greater than the herbs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and nest in its branches." That's how Matthew records it. Mark and Luke's account slightly different, but it all says the same thing. He says that this kingdom that he's been talking about is likened to a mustard seed. And he says it's the least of all the seeds. That was an expression in the first century. We have expressions today, don't we? We say something's as big as a barn. Well, there are things bigger than a barn. But when we use that expression, at least around here, I don't know if people in New York City would understand that expression very well, but around here people would know. But when you say something's as big as a barn, that means it's pretty big. That doesn't mean it's the biggest. It means it's pretty big. Well, in the first century, if you would say something was as small as a mustard seed, you'd be using an expression, an idiom. And people would know that you're talking about something that's really, really small. Tiny. So Jesus wasn't teaching a botany lesson, but he was using something that everybody that he was talking to that day would know. Everybody knew what a mustard seed looked like. Everybody knew what a mustard plant looked like. So Jesus chooses that particular seed to teach a great lesson. And that plant would grow sometimes, at least in Palestine, and of course that's where this takes place, sometimes it would grow 8 or 10 feet, great big bush. And what would happen? Well, it was big enough where birds would actually come and sit in it. So this mustard seed, which is tiny, I mean you can see it if you've ever planted mustard around here, you've seen those tiny little black seeds. And they are tiny. But that tiny little seed, when it's planted in the ground, when it receives the right amount of nutrients and water and sun, that tiny little seed produces this great big 8 or 10 foot bush. So what he's telling is, it's hard to not understand. The point is very clear. And that's why Jesus chose this. It was very clear for those people. They understood that he says the kingdom of heaven started out with very tiny, insignificant beginnings. Just look at that tiny little black seed. You couldn't imagine, if you had never seen a mustard bush, you wouldn't think that that tiny little seed could produce that great big bush. And so here Jesus is talking about the kingdom of heaven is like that. It's starting out with very tiny, very insignificant beginnings. And we'll look at what some of those are. But that's what he's telling us. Because from man's viewpoint, all right, not God's, God knew what was going to happen to the kingdom. But from man's viewpoint, all right, the kingdom had a very small beginning, had an insignificant beginning. Because look at the founder, look at the king. Look at who started the kingdom, and look at who the king and the ruler, the one with authority is. Look who he is, and look at his characteristics. The Bible says he was going to grow up as a tender plant out of dry ground. Let's go back to Isaiah 53. And if you ever want to learn a lot about who Jesus is, his role, go to Isaiah 53. The whole chapter is pretty much about Jesus. Isaiah 53, and notice verse 2. Isaiah 53 verse 2 says, "For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant and as a root out of dry ground. He has no form or comeliness, and when we see him, there's no beauty that we should desire him. He shall grow up," notice what it says, "as a tender plant and as a root out of dry ground." Would something like that be likely to survive? No. And that's what Isaiah is telling us. It's unlikely that a tender plant in dry ground, where it doesn't even have roots to speak of, would survive. You wouldn't expect it to survive. And that's what Isaiah is prophesying. Look at this. Look at this man, this Messiah. You wouldn't expect him and his kingdom to survive or to become anything of significance. Now remember, Isaiah is prophesying over 700 years before Christ is born. He says that's what Christ is going to be like, a tender plant. Jesus came into this world as a baby. Now it's hard to believe, looking over here at Aubrey, you knew I would somehow include her in the sermon. But looking at it, it's hard to believe Jesus was that size, but he was. Jesus came into this world in a natural way, in the sense of he was born. Born in Bethlehem, just like the Bible said he would be. Born in very insignificant circumstances. Just a regular birth. But Jesus looked like that. Who would think that he would become a king? A ruler of the greatest kingdom this world's ever seen. Mustard seed. Mustard seed beginnings. It wasn't a great birth, not one that you would expect. Where did he grow up? He was raised in Nazareth. Nazareth was a despised town. Look at Matthew chapter 2 for a second. Matthew chapter 2. Verse 23 says, very last verse of Matthew chapter 2. "And he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled," see, this is fulfillment of prophecy, "which was spoken by the prophets, he shall be called a Nazarene." And And then it says later, can anything good come out of Nazareth? See, Jesus grew up, didn't grow up in Jerusalem, the capital city, didn't grow up in a great city, didn't grow up in a wealthy family, didn't grow up in a powerful family, did not grow up in a kingly family. Mustard seed birth, very insignificant. He had absolutely no formal religious training whatsoever. Now, today's world, you would think, wow, that he's not going to amount to anything. Didn't have any formal religious training, didn't go to a seminary, didn't go to a theological school. How could he possibly become a religious teacher? He didn't have the religious training at all. Turn with me to John chapter 7. John chapter 7, verse 15. Well, verse 14 says, now about the middle of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and taught. I mean, he's in his early 30s. He has no background of studying. Listen to what it says. He went up into the middle of the temple and taught, and the Jews marveled, saying, how does this man know letters, having never studied? How does this man know? Be like someone today going into some prestigious university, maybe going into the physics department, and having never studied in any university or college or anything, getting up and addressing them and explaining things to them that they never knew. That's what Jesus is doing right there. And so the Jews are responding, how's that possible? This guy never studied at any of the religious schools or religious institutes in the first century. How's he teaching us? Mustard seed beginnings. He wasn't wealthy. Look at Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9, verses 57 and 58. Says, now it happened as they journeyed on the road that someone said to him, Lord, I will follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said to him, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Jesus had nothing. He had nothing like the mustard seed. He didn't have anything. He didn't come from a wealthy family. He didn't have any political fame at all. Like he wasn't associated with the Pharisees or the Sadducees or any of the other groups in the first century. Mustard seed. And then he was put to death as a relatively young man. He was in his early 30s. Most people would have thought what? Well, that's the end of it. That's the end of Christ. That's the end of his following. That's the end of his disciples. Nothing more. That's it. It's done. And look at his apostles, the closest group to him. What were they? Oh, they were fishermen and just regular old people. Mustard seed people. That's what they were. Mustard seed people. They weren't scholars. They weren't nobles. But look what happened. Just like that mustard seed grew into a large plant, the kingdom would experience amazing growth. And this growth was prophesied. Look what Isaiah chapter 2 says about the kingdom. Isaiah chapter 2, we're going to read verses 2 and 3. And then we're going to go to Daniel chapter 2. So Daniel, first of all, Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. And this is what Isaiah saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem, what was going to happen in the first century. Again, more than 700 years before it took place. Isaiah says, "Now it shall come to pass in the latter days," what we commonly call the Christian age, "that the mountain of the Lord's house," the kingdom of heaven, the church in the first century, "shall be established on the top of the mountains," established in Jerusalem, "and it shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow into it. Many people shall come and say, 'Come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem.'" All nations, many people. So Isaiah, more than 700 years before, said that this mustard seed was going to grow into a big plant. Daniel chapter 2. First of all, verse 35. Daniel chapter 2, verse 35. This is the great vision that King Nebuchadnezzar had. Daniel's explaining the dream because no one else can. Verse 35, he says, "Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together." That's all the worldly kingdoms and people. "And became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth." Then skip down to verse 44. "And in the days of these kings," that's the Roman Empire, which of course happened in the first century, "the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." Starts as a mustard seed, ends as the greatest kingdom the world's ever seen. Just a few weeks after the death of the king, the kingdom was ushered in. Acts chapter 2, the day of Pentecost. Amazing growth. Amazing growth. Many people. Acts chapter 2, verse 41. Notice how many people started. Verse 41 says, "Then those who gladly received his word were baptized, and that day about 3,000 souls were added to them." 3,000 in one day. This plant's really starting to go off. Acts chapter 4, verse 4. "However, many of those who heard the word believed, and the number of the men came to be about 5,000. Acts chapter 6, verse 1. "Now in those days when the number of the disciples was multiplying, more and more and more people." So from a handful of disciples, a kingdom soon spanned the globe. The day of small beginnings, mustard seed, mustard seed. What does this have to do with you, and what does it have to do with me? A lot. How can I help bring about growth of the kingdom? 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 6 says, "I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase." Alan Webster, in his Heart to Heart paper, told this story. So several years ago, I heard the story of Larry Walters. You may have heard this before. A 33-year-old man who decided he wanted to see his neighborhood from a new perspective. He went down to the local army surplus store one morning and bought 45 used weather balloons. That afternoon, he strapped himself to a lawn chair to which several of his friends had the now helium-filled balloons. Don't get ahead of me. That afternoon, he strapped himself into a lawn chair. He took along a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and a BB gun. figuring he could shoot the balloons one at a time when he was ready to land. Well, Walters, who assumed the balloons would lift him about 100 feet, he miscalculated. He soared more than 11,000 feet. Of course, that was right into the middle of air traffic at Los Angeles International Airport. So imagine what those people were thinking when they saw this crazy person in a lawn chair with all these balloons. He stayed airborne more than 2 hours, forced the airport to shut down, caused long delays. Finally, he was grounded, and the reporters asked him three questions. First question, were you scared? Yes. Would you do it again? No. Why did you do it? Because you can't just sit there. He's right. We can't just sit there. And that's the point. God gave us talents to serve, to glorify, to build up the church. Bible says fruitless branches will be pruned. Lukewarm souls get spewed out from his mouth. The guy was right. We can't just sit there. So what can I do? Here's a list that I wrote out. What can I do? What can you do? What can we all do? Some of these things you've probably thought about. Some of them probably not. Obviously, and this has to be at the top of the list, make sure you teach your children and your grandchildren. That's got to be at the top of the list. That's the most important thing for you to do. That's your top priority. But certainly there are other things. Give tracts on different subjects to friends, neighbors, co-workers. Leave tracts with the church's address in various offices, hospital, waiting rooms. I see those all the time in different places. People left a little tract here or there. Be a good example to others. That's a difficult one at times. Be a good example to others. Here's one that we can all do, though, and that's pray for the lost. Everybody in here knows people who are lost. We do really well out. Invite others to Bible classes, worship services, so on. Here's something you may have never thought about doing, though. And I think it's a great idea, considering how mobile our society is. Tape a sign on your car window. Tape a sign on your car window advertising the church. Maybe when we've got a great 8.5 by 11 sheet that I don't remember somebody made up, but it's really great about the church here and when we meet and so forth. Tape it to your car window. What a great idea. Just a great idea. People will see that as many times as we go to Walmart or the grocery store or work or wherever. A lot of people will see that. Or something as simple as the church's website on it. Another great idea. I know David would make those up. There's lots of other things to help us grow that kingdom. Because that's what Jesus wanted. Wanted the kingdom of heaven to grow. That was a characteristic. I mentioned 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 in our class this morning about sometimes there's a time to speak up and sometimes there's a time to be silent. But when there's a time to speak up, we need to do what Peter says in 1 Peter 3:15. Always be ready to give an answer. Always be ready to give an answer. Ecclesiastes 3 says that God has put eternity in everybody's heart. Everybody Some people won't admit it. Everybody has a longing. Everybody has a longing. And when you're talking with someone and that longing comes up, time to speak up. It's time to speak up. Time of new beginnings, small beginnings. Like a mustard seed. But when it's planted, when it comes in contact with the right soil, and when it receives that nourishment, it grows. It grows. And that's what Jesus wanted. And that's what we need to think about when we leave here, when we go into the world, when we see people, when we're around people. Take advantage of those opportunities. Because our time is very limited. Something else the wise man Solomon said. Our time is limited. We need to use it very wisely. This morning it may be the time that you're ready to respond to that invitation. Or maybe it's a time where you're needing prayers of the congregation. This invitation song was chosen, and it's so appropriate to what the lesson was about. To think about your relationship. And if you need to respond, we want you to do that as we stand and sing.